Good afternoon. Illinois Appellate Court, First District Court is now in session. The First Division, the Honorable Justice Michael B. Hyman presiding, case number 12-1321, People versus George Anderson.
Good afternoon. Sorry for the little delay. My name is Justice Michael B. Hyman. With me is Justice Aurelia Puchinsky and Justice Carl Anthony Walker. We will conduct ourselves like we would in court. Please make your arguments. We will probably interrupt, finish your thought, and then if you would answer our questions. Each side has 20 minutes. Mr. Hernandez, you have, Mr. Ornstein, you can have time to reserve for rebuttal. And let us know when you introduce yourself, how much time you wish.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mike Ornstein, State Appellate Defender. Defendant Appellant George Anderson, and I'd like to present 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. Reserve.
Thank you. Ms. Weber, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors.
Hope you're better today. Last time you had a terrible cold.
Yes, I feel much better today. Thank you.
You've been before us too, Mr. Ornstein, but you are both veterans of our division, so glad to have you both.
A good thing.
Ms. Weber, go ahead. Okay, you introduced yourself. Any questions anybody has? Okay. Mr. Ornstein, you may proceed.
Justice Simon, I would just like to point out that I'm at DePaul Law School and there are a couple students behind me watching this.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Your Honors. I'm going to primarily focus on actual innocence and specifically on the affidavit of Bertram Anderson, who I will call Bertram. Under People v. Robinson, Your Honors, the primary question facing this court is this. Does Bertram's affidavit, taken as true, make it probable that the jury, more likely than not, would acquit? The answer is yes. Bertram attested that Jerome Johnson sought to reclaim his car. Bertram's fellow C-notes, Michael Sutton and Anthony Wilson, shot at Johnson and shot first. Later,
we've read your briefs, right, and gone through the record. So, make several arguments. What is your best argument on that issue?
The best argument is the affidavit. The affidavit is taken as true, and taken as true, Johnson acted in self-defense because he came under fire while trying to do a dangerous but legal thing, reclaim his car. And because Johnson can claim self-defense, and Anderson is not accountable, there's nothing for Anderson to be accountable for.
Well, but the state says that you're doing nothing more than rehashing the self-defense claim that had been rejected by not only the circuit court, but by our court previously.
Well, they argue that they make the general argument that I'm doing that as a whole. But if you look at their arguments, their arguments very specifically pertain to the affidavit of Johnson. The affidavit of Bertram Anderson is new and newly discovered. And under People v. Ortiz, you can raise new claims of actual innocence with even if you raised it before, when you have a new witness.
Mr. Ornstein, let me ask you a question really quickly, though. Did you write this brief?
I did.
You did? Okay, because you just gave a different standard when you started than what you actually state in your brief.
Tell me.
In your brief, you said that the standard was that he needed to show at this stage that an acquittal is, 1 second. You give a different standard. You said that he needs to show that it's probable that at a later stage, he will be able to make a showing that an acquittal is more likely than not. And that's not what you just gave us earlier.
Well, standard. I may have made a mistake. At the ultimate stage of stage three, he will have to show that an acquittal is more likely than not. At this stage, he only needs to show that it is probable that an acquittal is more likely than not. So it's sort of like 51% against 26% at this stage.
Sure, but in your brief on page 14, I don't know if you have your brief in front of you, but that's where you make the statement that the petitioner needs to make a showing at this stage that an acquittal is more likely than not.
So then that way, let me. Okay. Well, then the next sentence I say he need only establish. Oh, there's a typo. Need not make it showing at this stage that it pulls more like that. He need only establish a probability.
Okay.
That a third stage, he will make the third stage showing. So it's not as well written as I could have.
All right, that clarifies it. Thank you.
The state says there's ample evidence that shows that Bertram's affidavit is not newly discovered. What's your response to that?
I'm not sure what.
Well, so they say there was ample evidence.
Oh, yeah. Their argument is basically that because Bertram said he saw Anderson, Anderson must have been able to see Bertram. Therefore, Anderson knew Bertram was there and should have gotten him as a witness. I would say, first of all, there's no indication that Anderson had any idea who Bertram was. And just because one recognizes the other's face, the other is not necessarily true. And the other point is that just because a pedestrian or someone standing in the street sees a driver does not mean that the driver is going to see the person on the street, especially where, according to Bertram's affidavit, he was not with the three people that Anderson said he did see. Anderson said he saw three people, Sutton, Wilson, I forget the third one, but it was not Bertram. And according to Bertram's affidavit, he and two other people were behind. So just because Anderson saw these three people, well, first of all, Anderson said he saw the three people. So that there's a reasonable inference that he didn't see anybody else. But especially considered with Bertram's affidavit that they were not with the three people, there's at least a reasonable inference that he did not see them. And under People v. Knight, which I cite, at this stage, the reasonable inferences go to the defendant petitioner.
Thank you. Their next argument is it's at least cumulative as well.
I'm not sure how Bertram's affidavit could be cumulative. I mean, it's a new person with a new point of view. With new motives, on a different side. There's a little bit stronger argument that Johnson's argument is cumulative, but even that's not cumulative. Now you have to, even Johnson's is a cumulative because you have to consider it in conjunction with Bertram's. It's not just one witness, it's two. You mean cumulative to the trial testimony?
Yes.
No, it's not cumulative because Anderson couldn't see who didn't see the shooting.
There's no dispute there was an ongoing conflict between Jones and Johnson. No dispute that Sutton made statements indicating he intended to shoot Johnson. That Anderson, if they came to get Johnson's car, no dispute that members of C-Notes were armed.
As to those facts, if those were the only facts in the affidavit, the facts we're relying on, they might have a better argument that it's cumulative. But if you have some facts in the affidavit that are cumulative and some that are not cumulative, it doesn't make the whole thing cumulative. We're relying, primarily on that who shot first, and that is not cumulative to the trial testimony at all.
Thank you.
But now, Mr. Ornstein, the state is also arguing that this is not necessarily new information, that this information came out at the first trial. All you're doing is bringing forth a different person to provide the same information that everybody has always, that has already been tested, so to speak.
No, it is not, and I'm looking at the briefs. I perhaps did not do as good a job with the briefs with this as I should have. There were shootings at two different scenes. The first scene was by Jerome Johnson's car, the alley and the gangway. And there's absolutely no testimony except contrary state testimony as to who shot first. The state witnesses said that Johnson shot first, or Johnson and Anderson shot first, or four people shot first. There's no evidence in the trial record that the C note shot first in as to that first shooting. As to the second shooting, there is some evidence that corroborates that that Johnson was shot at first. It was the affidavit of a witness very similar to the name Bertram. I'll call him the neighborhood eyewitness that said that he the first shots came from, I believe, the north or the south, whichever point the C notes were at. So it is similar to that, but it is now cumulative because the neighborhood eyewitness sort of went back and forth. If you look at his direct, his cross, and his redirect, he sort of said what people wanted him to say. And so just because some testimony goes to the same point doesn't make you cumulative. The standard for cumulative is if it adds anything to the trier of fact. And when you've got direct evidence as to the first scene, that adds to the trier of fact. And when you have, a second witness corroborating the first witness, that also adds to the trier of fact. I mean, unless there are any other questions, I note that the state argues that Johnson was the initial aggressor. And there are three ways you can be an initial aggressor, and none of them apply here. You can be a committee or trying to commit a forcible felony. That's under subsection A of section 574. Johnson was there to get his car. You could call that brave, foolhardy, or even reckless conduct, but you can't call it a forcible felony. The second way you can be an initial aggressor is by provoking an assailant's force, in order to create an excuse to create great bodily harm.
And that comes to this point too, that the state contends that both sides came there for a fight, and that's when they go on to say, and Johnson shot first based upon the testimony from the prior trial.
Well, that goes to motive, Your Honor. Okay. So if you say both sides came there for a fight, that could go to section 2B of the statute, where you initially provoke an assailant's force, intending to provoke great bodily harm. So, but that doesn't make any sense because he's not going to draw the opponent's fire, and in the hopes that they'll miss, and years later in the trial he can raise self-defense. That's not terribly logical.
You go through that in your brief. Yeah.
So the only section the state specifically cites in its brief of the statute is subsection C, where you initially provoke force without this incident. And I mean, so even if both sides came for a fight under subsection B, C or B for that matter, one side has to be the initial aggressor. And who was the initial aggressor? We say it's the ones who stole the car, who put it there, who lurked waiting there for Johnson to come, and who armed themselves, and who shot first. That makes them the initial aggressor. If you think you might be there for a fight, but then you're shot at, you can't claim self-defense. I think the other thing is the idea that he came there to commit first degree murder. He wouldn't have done it the way that it says in the affidavit. You're not going to get out by yourself and look around and go towards your car, walk right into the trap with no backup. You're going to come with two cars and shoot right from the car. Because why would you expose yourself?
Let's just make the record clear here. This is all about accountability, because Anderson didn't fire guns. This is about the actions of Johnson.
I'm using too many pronouns, as my mother would say. So Johnson, if Johnson was going,
Johnson fired first, and because Anderson was there as sort of the driver, so to speak.
Right.
So this is all about accountability. Anderson didn't fire any guns. Right.
That's correct. So if Johnson was going there intending to basically commit a murder from the start, it would not be a particularly rational thing to go get out by himself at the scene of a trap where he knows they're waiting for him without any help and get shot at first. It makes much more sense that he was there to do what the C notes were planning on him to do, which is he could try to reclaim his car, which is a logical thing to do because a car is an expensive thing and you don't want to get it taken to a chop shop.
Well, I don't understand why one would follow the other necessarily. You say it's so.
By which would follow the other? I'm sorry.
Well, that you know, to get the car that he wouldn't come shooting first, that didn't make any sense to you.
Well, I mean, not that he wouldn't come shooting first by himself.
I'm not clear why not.
Because if you know people are setting a trap for you, you can reasonably anticipate that they would be armed. And you're going to want to.
Because you're saying because there's nobody else in the car that's shooting, that excuses it? You say he would have come with backup. You say he would come with backup. You wouldn't just go in there.
Can you repeat the whole question? I'm sorry.
All right. You say he would have been more prepared.
If he was there to commit suicide,
I'm not clear on what you mean by that.
Yeah, if Johnson and Anderson were going there intending to commit first degree murder at the start and weren't there for the car, they drive up. They see their three adversaries. For Johnson to get out and go to where they expect him to go, he's falling into a trap. You know, it doesn't make any sense. But the other thing is, at this stage, you take the affidavit as true. So if he's going there and Johnson's shot first, I think it's pretty speculative to say when the car is there, he's going to reclaim his car, that he's not going to reclaim his car. He's going there for first degree murder.
I do have a question on the other issue.
Brady.
Yeah. They raise a question of whether this motion to compel discovery was actually even filed. It's not stamped. It's not signed. There's a lot of questions of whether it even exists. I mean, what's your response to all of that?
My response to that is there should be no question that it exists because Anderson offered it as part of his petition for its purpose to support his petition. And therefore, it should be taken as true that it exists.
But just because he says it exists, we should take it as existing. I mean, he has no affidavit from. Their point is, all right, if it exists, what about an affidavit from Alvarez who said there isn't anything, or what about an affidavit from Johnson's lawyer, or where is anything supporting this? Or are we supposed to just rely on the fact that he believes it? I mean.
A, yes, because his allegations are taken as true, but B, there's certain things he's not expected to get. He's not expected to get the affidavit from his lawyer because that could be possibly construed as ineffective assistance of counsel. Johnson's lawyer, he has no obligation whatsoever towards him, and certainly the state's attorneys does not. And if they're saying it's a forgery, then that's a credibility issue that they can raise and shouldn't be much of a problem. All they have to do is call somebody, either Alvarez or Johnson's lawyer, and they're going to say, "I never drafted that."
On the other hand, they're saying, "No, you have a burden. You could have gotten an affidavit from at least Johnson's lawyer saying that what that document is. I mean, alleged motion is what they call it."
That's true, but Section 122.2 and People v. Collins only requires documentation, not documentation on documentation on top of documentation. He submitted a copy of the motion.
But you say it's a copy of a motion. It's not stamped.
But it's not signed. But it makes sense. It's not stamped or signed, Your Honor, because the person he probably got it from is Johnson, because Johnson he submitted other documents from Johnson, a letter to Johnson from one of our lawyers. And it's perfectly common and normal for a lawyer to print off a copy and send a copy of a pleading to a client. It's not expected or normal that it has to be a file stamp copy.
I'm guessing that.
And the other thing, Your Honor,
why couldn't you have done an affidavit from Anderson to that effect? I mean, if that is true, what you just said, Anderson knows it. How he got it.
Well, wait a minute. The clerk's file has to have a copy of the stamped and signed motion.
Let me get past the stamped and signed. We're not arguing, or we're certainly not arguing now, that it was necessarily filed. We're arguing that it was drafted by counsel, that it was something that was drafted by counsel and Johnson's counsel, and Johnson believed at the time, and Johnson's counsel believed that the things were true because she drafted it. She may not have filed it. And I think in fact she probably didn't file it. But she drafted this thing that said that state's attorney said to me that these files are lost. There are no GPRs. And that's what we're relying on. I don't know that it was filed, and that's not essential to what we're saying. Now, as far as an affidavit, I mean, I'd have to go back in and see, I believe he said everything in here is true. And I think implicitly, if he's including that, he's asserting that it's true.
Okay.
So you're resting this all on Bertrand Anderson saying he's no relation to the defendant, is he?
Oh, no, there's nothing saying that. I never heard that.
You're basing this on his affidavit that he talked to the police way back when this all happened.
Right.
The state should have known that. The state did know that. He's saying the state should have known that. The defendant is saying, well, the state should have known that, and they should have turned that over to me because it's exculpatory evidence, and they didn't. And the police were saying, and the state was saying, oh, a lot of these things in the file were lost.
Well, I would say that what the detectives know, it's part of what the state knows. It's not just what the state's attorneys know. And so the detective who took his statement knew. And that's all you need. You don't need a prosecutor to actually also know.
Right. Okay. But the police reports were given to the defendant, but not general notes, not street files, none of that.
Yeah, in particular, I mean, particularly not the GPRs, the general progress notes, which is, you know, we all know those are the mm-hmm. notes they take when they're actually doing something with a witness.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Your time is, if you could.
Sure. So for those reasons, we would ask that this court reverse the trial court's decision and remand for further proceedings on the petition and appointment of counsel.
Thank you. Ms. Weber?
I have a question, just Simon. As far as those general progress reports, we know today that they were lost. And we know they were lost because they've been found. Did you ever have any information in the past, or did counsel have any information in the past that those notes were lost? Because you make the statement in your brief, and I can't, and it's quoted, so I can't tell if you're saying that this is what the attorney for Ms. Gubin said, or is this just, you just simply put it in quotation marks?
Could you be, please, real kind, it's a point to the
page 26 of your brief.
Page 26 of my brief. Okay, I'm there. Could you ask it again? I'm sorry.
Just midway down the page, you mentioned that the general progress reports were lost. And of course, today we know that they were lost because they've been found. My question is whether or not anyone knew in the past that these notes had been lost.
I guess it comes as a surprise to me that they had been found. What I'm arguing is that during this litigation, co-defendant's lawyer believed they were lost according to the state's attorney. And so at trial, this was not a discovered witness. I'm not quite sure we're getting at.
Never mind.
Okay.
Okay, Ms. Weber.
Thank you, Your Honor. Defendant was not found guilty because Johnson shot first.
Can you turn up your volume, please?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
Of course, Your Honor, give me just a moment.
Okay.
Can you hear me better?
Much better.
Okay, thank you. Defendant was not found guilty because co-defendant Johnson shot first. Defendant was found guilty because he and Johnson both went over there as part of an ongoing and escalating gang dispute to shoot the C notes. This court has already rejected the assertion that they went over there on an innocent mission just to receive Johnson's car. That was rejected by the trial court, and that has been rejected by this court. Bertram's affidavit doesn't offer any insight into defendant's intent, and it doesn't cast any doubt on the narrative of the events that was presented at trial.
Do you disagree that it's newly discovered, or do you agree it was newly discovered?
I don't agree that it is newly discovered, but even if it was, it is not material. Reason it's not material because it doesn't matter who shot first. There was ample testimony that the defendant was involved in this from the beginning, the very first incident. All of these incidents took place within about a 2-hour time period. And the very initial incident was Lamont Jones telling defendant not to sell drugs in C-note territory. And then after that threat was made, then co-defendant Johnson beat up Lamont Jones. So Lamont Jones came back to defendant's shop and said, "Your homie just beat me up. So, you know, just got on the phone. Someone is going to die today." And then about 20 minutes after that, Eric and co-defendant Johnson come back into the shop and say, "Well, the C-notes just shot at Eric while he was driving co-defendant Johnson's car. So we need to go get the car." And they did. So they were going over there to retaliate. And there's no question that defendant was involved in this. He's involved every step of the way. The C-notes expect him to come with Johnson to get the car because he's involved.
Wait. What is in the record that shows that the C-notes expected? I mean, you say that, but what?
Yes, let me see. That was the testimony, I believe, of Wilson. If I could look in my... I believe it because trying to find this in here. Wilson testified that about this ongoing dispute on the first time, and that they returned and they got the gun to put it in the brown paper bag. Wilson testified that he had seen defendant drive the Oldsmobile car before, which was Johnson's car, and that they were they left in the Oldsmobile. This is in trial record C-110. They returned and they got the gun, got the paper bag, and put it in the flower pot. So I'm sorry, Your Honor. I will. Keep looking. I'm certain that it was in the record that they did expect Johnson to come back with them. And even if you take Bertram's affidavit as fact, they expected Johnson to come back. They expected defendant to come back with Johnson for the shooting. And defendant switched out his car. Instead of taking his own car to take Johnson back to that area, they switched out for a different car so that defendant's car would not be recognized. And this is defendant, not Johnson. So if he is concerned about his car being recognized when he takes Johnson back over there, it's because he's involved. He's involved in this entire incident. So when defendant takes him over there and drops him off in the alley, and defendant's own testimony at trial was that Johnson did not run toward the car. Instead, he ran down the alley toward the C-notes because that was the entire purpose. That is why the defendant waited. That is why he backed the car up. And that is why he drove Johnson away from the scene after the shooting. He waited for the shooting in the alley and then in the shooting in the street. There were two exchanges of gunfire, both in the alley and in the street. And it doesn't matter. This was defendant's argument at trial. Defense counsel argued in closing argument that it was really the C-notes who were the instigators of this, that they fired first, and that Johnson and defendant were just acting in self-defense. And the state's attorney argued in rebuttal, does it matter who actually shot first? No, and it didn't. There's nothing in the circuit court's finding that found defendant guilty because Johnson shot first. The circuit court found defendant guilty because he wasn't just there. The circuit court found that they had the intent
But isn't it correct, Ms. Weber, that if Johnson actually has a self-defense claim, that that would inure to Anderson?
If Johnson had a self-defense claim, then yes, that would also go to Anderson, but he did not. It has been rejected. It was rejected at the trial court that this was a self-defense claim.
But that's what the issue is here now, is whether the real question is whether or not this is in fact new evidence. And I know you've already said you don't think that it is, but if it is, I know that the new evidence is coming from someone who was not previously available. Allegedly, the information was given to police, and that information is now lost. So why shouldn't he be able to at least at this stage be able to show that there's a colorable claim of actual innocence? Because Johnson has a self-defense claim, and that would make Johnson innocent, then therefore Anderson would be as well, because Anderson is only here based on accountability.
But Johnson does not have a self-defense claim because it does not matter who shot first. It doesn't matter if Bertram's affidavit is correct and that it was the C notes who fired first. They went over there for a shooting. Johnson had his gun. He took the gun when he got out of the car and ran toward the C notes. Just because the C notes got to their gun first, which is what the defendant is alleging, that they got the first shot off, it doesn't mean that Johnson now gets to say it was self-defense when he was himself was going over there to shoot them. And nothing in Bertram's—
Let's just be clear though with the trial evidence. What was the evidence that actually clarifies for us absolutely that they went there for a shooting?
That was a finding of fact by the circuit court, but the evidence that he relied on was this evidence that all throughout the day there had been this ongoing back and forth, that the defendant parked away and let co-defendant Johnson out, that he went forward and he parked and he waited for co-defendant Johnson to come back.
Was that when co-defendant Johnson was making the phone call? He dropped him off at the phone booth, and our defendant in this case had to wait for him to finish making his phone call?
That was Lamont Jones that went to make the phone call at defendant's shop, not co-defendant Johnson. So it was Lamont Jones who was the initial person who came to the shop in the morning and told defendant to stop selling drugs on C note territory. Oh. I mean, the trial court made specific findings of fact in this case, and this court has relied on them. That quote, this is the finding of the trial court. The evidence shows clearly that defendant took an active part in this particular shooting. He was not just there. The evidence shows the movement of a car, the placement of the car. The statement itself indicates that defendant knew what was going on with the shooting. And this court believes that Mr. Sutton, along with Mr. Anderson, went there for the purpose of a shooting to do harm to those other individuals. And it does not matter who shot first. It does not matter who shot first because they went there for a fight. They went there for a shooting. And even if the C notes managed to get that first shot off, it does not matter because they went there to shoot at the C notes. So Johnson would not have a self-defense claim. This was already litigated in the trial court, and it was raised on appeal in his direct appeal, and it was raised in his fourth post-conviction appeal, in which this court again found that there was evidence and there was evidence to support the trial court's finding.
All of that is true, but no court, not the trial court, And then it's not the appellate court on any of the previous appeals have had Bertrand Anderson's affidavit or testimony.
That is true, Your Honor, but no court has ever made a finding of fact or even referenced that Johnson fired first. That simply was just not.
Because they had nobody, no witness, no outside witness, no unattached witness who said that.
Well, Your Honor, if that were true, they could have said that the evidence showed that the Sinos fired first. I mean, the testimony at trial was that Johnson, from the state's witness, was that Johnson filed first. The trial court never said that, never stated that, never made that a finding of fact. And the state accepted that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who shot first because he went there to shoot. You cannot go with the intent to shoot someone with your gun out, running toward them. And because they managed to get a shot off at you first, you are now committing self-defense. It just is irrelevant.
What about, just if you would go to the other issue for a moment, just what's your response to Mr. Orenstein's argument with regard to the motion, alleged motion, and his contention on that?
Well, you know, we made our argument in our brief for that, but if his argument is that it's not file stamped because defense counsel didn't file it, then that leads one to believe that the issue was resolved. I mean, the only thing Bertrand's
well, he's not saying that. He's just saying that maybe it wasn't resolved, but it raises an issue as to the street file and what was told by the state's attorney's office to Johnson's attorney.
And again, Your Honor, I would argue that that is completely insufficient. But even if, I mean, all
why,
Bertrand's-
Why is it insufficient? I guess I-
Because it's just a piece of paper. It's not even signed. I mean, it's not just that it's not a stamp.
But that's not, at this stage, they're raising an issue with regard to that. And here's some evidence that indicates what the state's attorney said, and maybe there should be a hearing to determine, you know, what's going on here and whether the prosecutors or the police knew something that was Brady material that could have made a difference in the jury's result.
Well, Your Honor, we would argue that even if Bertram spoke to the police and even if the police wrote that down on a GPR and then lost it or hid it or didn't turn it over, it is not Brady because it's not material. Again, this all comes down to this red herring of a claim about who shot first. And that really is not relevant. It is irrelevant. This court did not make a finding, or the trial court did not make a finding that Johnson shot first. And, or that the C-notes shot first. I mean, the evidence of trial presented was that Johnson shot first, but the trial court never made that a finding of fact. Trial court did not rely on that in its opinion that defendant was guilty. Defendant was found guilty because he and co-defendant Johnson intended to go over there to commit a shooting. There is nothing to suggest that they were just going over to get in this car. Again, you have to look at all of the trial evidence and this evidence here and the whole series of events that happened throughout the day, telling defendant to stop selling drugs, and then that person gets beat up by co-defendant Johnson, the GDs, and then the C-notes fire back at the GDs and steal their car, and then the GDs go back to get the car and fire at them. I mean, it makes no sense that this rival gang has shot at their car and stolen the car, and all they're going to do is just go back and get it. Like, this was part of an escalating gang war.
Any other questions?
No, Your Honor, we would, again, just reiterate that this is a red herring, that is not, it does not matter ultimately if the C-notes fired first. It does not create a self-defense claim for Johnson. It does not create a self-defense claim for a defendant. And for these reasons, and those contained in our brief, we'd ask that you affirm the trial court's decision denying defendant leave to file a successive post-conviction petition. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Orenstein. You're
I did that last time too. I apologize. Okay. 3 points, Your Honor. So first, on the state, first sort of a technical legal point, the state argues that Johnson's affidavit, Bertram's affidavit, and Johnson's probably too, it's arguing, is contradictory of my client's testimony in terms of which direction Johnson did right after he got out of the car. And I would know that People v. Robinson said that you do not consider, you know, at this stage, whether the evidence is contradictory to the trial testimony, and there's no reason to assume that does not include defense testimony. That's all for a later stage. The second thing is that, you know, the state's attorney says repeatedly, you know, the circuit court made these findings. Well, the circuit court made these findings upon all of the totality of the evidence, and that includes not only the C notes testimony, but also their prior inconsistent statements, their contemporaneous prior inconsistent statements, which I'm pretty sure, I can't say for a fact because I don't remember, I don't have my notes, but I'm pretty sure they were offered substantively. And in those prior inconsistent statements, it was either Anderson and Johnson both got out of the car and shot immediately without Johnson walking anywhere, or there were four people got out of Anderson's car and they shot anywhere. So of course they were there to commit a murder. And of course that's what they were doing. It's a different set of facts when at this stage this is taken as true. And let me see here.
When counsel says it doesn't matter who shot first. Of course, you disagree.
Of course, it makes a great deal of difference who shot first because if there's a threat to your life, the self-defense statute says that you can respond with commensurate force. Okay, so there's no question under the affidavits that there was a threat to Johnson's life, so he was entitled to use commensurate force unless there's an exception saying that there's not. The exception is the only exception that I know of would be the initial aggressor statute 574, if I remember that correctly. But they keep saying what he went to do, what he was there to do. Intent, motive, it doesn't satisfy any of the elements of the initial aggressor statute. And if they're saying that, I think what the state is essentially saying is they were guilty of attempted murder or attempt murder the second they got into their car, certainly the second anybody out of the car with a gun, which would be a substantial step. I mean, I don't think that was their trial theory. I could be wrong, but if I remember correctly, the only attempt murder charge was because one of the C notes got shot and the attempt murder was based on that. I don't think you can say that because he had sort of Johnson had some sort of intent or motive, or Anderson did, that alone takes you out of self-defense. And with that, I would ask that this court reverse and remand for the false conviction proceedings.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your briefs, your arguments today.
Thank you.
Take the case under advisement and have a good afternoon to both of you. Thank you.